This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. South Africa is one of the new democracies that is trying to uncover the truth of its repressive past. Like several other new democracies, it created a truth commission. The commission has offered amnesty to people who honestly confess to their politically motivated human rights violations. The period for requesting amnesty expired earlier this month. Approximately 8,000 people have applied. Those who confess to gross human rights violations are given public hearings. The Reconciliation and Truth Commission will wrap up the public hearings phase of its investigation July 1st. My guest Priscilla Hayner is writing a book about truth commissions around the world and the questions they raise about the relationship between justice, truth, and reconciliation. She's a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. I asked her why South Africa's Truth Commission is granting amnesty instead of prosecuting those who have committed human rights violations.
Originally, this was very much a political compromise, to have an amnesty that would be part of this new government that was a government of national unity, but certainly led by the African National Congress, the ANC. Over time, as that amnesty came to be written into the Truth Commission, and it was set up that for someone to receive amnesty, they must give something first. They must tell publicly the full truth of their involvement in the acts that they are applying for amnesty for. It has become much more broadly defended and enthusiastically promoted in South Africa by many levels, certainly all political levels, that the Truth Commission was the only way to go for the country, that massive trials were not possible for a number of reasons. There weren't the resources. There was not enough information about many of the key players. Some of the information coming out now just wasn't known, and there wasn't the documentation to take people to court. At the same time, so many people were implicated. I mean, not only in running the apartheid state, but the many abuses behind that, and of course, abuses also that took place on the ANC side. So the Truth Commission has filled the void of needing to confront what has happened in the past, and it has turned into a hope for national reconciliation.
Now, if you apply for amnesty, do you necessarily get amnesty?
No, and that's important to know. You have to fulfill certain requirements when you apply for amnesty. First, of course, you have to tell the full truth about the acts that you were involved in. The amnesty, if it is given not as a broad amnesty for the person, but for the specific acts that they apply for. Now, that will include telling who it is that gave you orders to take part in or carry out the acts that you were involved in. So in other words, it goes up the chain by each amnesty applicant pointing to others. You also have to show that the act was a political act. In other words, if you're a white racist under the apartheid regime and you killed a black person because you didn't like him or maybe because he stole something from your business or because maybe you thought that he was doing something you weren't in favor of, that's not enough. You have to prove that you killed a person for political reasons, that person was a part of a political organization, and you also were acting as a political, for example, representing a political organization. The third thing is that you have to show that your act was proportional to the political objective that you are trying to pursue. In other words, if you kill 10 people, you know, a whole family, let's say, because you're trying to stop the distribution of leaflets of one member of that family, that's not proportional. So it's hard to say what proportional actually means, and actually that's one of the aspects that's been quite controversial in South Africa, because some of the amnesty applications that have been approved have been questionable as to whether they were proportional in that sense. That's something that they're constantly struggling with.
Say Mr. X is confessing to his crimes, and he implicates Mr. Y. He says Mr. Y gave him the orders to do it. But Mr. Y hasn't applied for amnesty. Mr. Y hasn't confessed. What happens to Mr. Y, the person who gave the orders?
Well, what's interesting is that if this had been a month ago, Mr. Y could then apply for amnesty. He would be notified in advance of the hearing that his name would be mentioned. This happens in any public hearing of the Truth Commission, that if someone is to be named as a perpetrator, they must be notified in advance. This has been a court order now. But now that the amnesty deadline is passed, there is a very interesting dynamic because people will be named. In the process of the hearings, other names will come out. And no one knows yet what all those 8,000 amnesty applications say and who they do name. So presumably there will be many people that are implicated who chose not to take that step of applying for the amnesty. They bargained that they could get away with not applying, and they will probably, some of them may well feel the consequences for it, and that person could then be prosecuted.
What do you think have been some of the most important revelations that have surfaced through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
The revelations actually have come out on a number of levels. There, of course, have been a number of well-known cases. Certainly in South Africa, there's a dozen or two or more of very well-known cases that have now publicly, information has started to come out from them, from the Truth Commission process, and that itself has been very important. I mean, the headlines are literally daily there in terms of who's saying what about who and exactly what cases are being dug up by the commission or what cases are being dealt with at the hearings. But on another level, the combination of the commission and a couple of high-profile trials that have gone forward over the last year has outlined in a way that we have not seen before the structure of the violence and the structure of the repression of the apartheid state. For example, the violence that has engulfed the eastern part of the country, KwaZulu-Natal, it's called, was, you know, and has long been either assumed or then documented to be as rooted in basically a campaign by the white government to foment black-on-black violence. Now, that many people had accepted that to be true, but it wasn't until a very high-level trial of the former Minister of Defense, Magnus Malan, and 19 other people, as well as some of the hearings in front of the Truth Commission, including the questions put forward to former President de Klerk a few weeks ago, that has really made very clear exactly that what that structure of violence was about and how the state was behind that. Now, I should say that is true despite the fact that there is still denial going on. Former President de Klerk himself denies that he knew about any of this, that he was involved, even though the commission has said to him that they have very clear evidence of his, of certainly his government's involvement, and that it would be highly unlikely that he wouldn't have known about it. The former Minister of Defense, Magnus Malan, continues to deny his involvement, and he was acquitted in that major trial. He and his 19 co-defendants were acquitted.
When former President de Klerk said that the government didn't authorize murder and torture, Desmond Tutu, the head of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, said that de Klerk's answers were unacceptable. Then de Klerk said that his party, the National Party, would boycott the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. What does that mean?
No one seems to know exactly what that means, actually. On a practical level, former President de Klerk has already come forward to the commission representing his political party, the National Party, which was in power for so many years, to answer questions of the commission. At this point, his involvement, since he has not applied for amnesty, his involvement perhaps would be to be subpoenaed to the commission to answer further questions, and that's not an optional response. If you're subpoenaed, you can serve 3 years in jail if you don't respond or be fined. So it's not clear on a practical level what the political party's statement that they will pull out will mean. On a more social or moral level, it could take away some of the legitimacy certainly from those quarters that support the National Party.
We're talking about the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission. My guest is Priscilla Hainer, and she has been studying truth commissions around the world and is currently writing a book comparing them. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. My guest is Priscilla Hainer, and she's been studying similar truth commissions around the world and is writing a book about them. She's been to South Africa and sat in on hearings from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Priscilla, one of the most, important revelations to have come out during the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to date is the story of Stephen Biko's murder. Stephen Biko was a young, charismatic leader of the anti-apartheid movement, and he was arrested, and he died while he was arrested. A lot of people assumed he was murdered by the police, but the police and all government authorities denied that and said it was an accident. The police who were responsible for the murder confessed to that as part of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission hearings. Now, Stephen Biko's widow, though, was very upset because she doesn't want these people to get amnesty. She'd prefer that there'd be a more formal prosecution and that they'd be punished. So I guess in a lot of ways, the Biko case really epitomizes the debate over prosecution versus amnesty.
It does. That case, of course, is one of the cases that's better known both there in the country and here and elsewhere in the world. When the commission began its work, as you say, the widow of Stephen Biko joined with members of two other families of victims to sue the commission to stop the provision of the amnesty. They said that the Constitution of South Africa holds that they should be allowed due justice in the courts. The Constitutional Court of South Africa ruled against those families, and the amnesty provision, of course, is still in effect. Now, this is really, I think, representative of some of the sentiment that is quite strong in the country. Not everyone is in support of the process, and certainly not everyone is in support of the amnesty provision. Is it enough for people to only know the truth? Is that what they want? I think often they do want to be able to take someone to court and not only to possibly punish the person, but also for civil claims, for example, to sue for damages. Both of those are wiped out by an amnesty that would be granted by the Truth Commission. So it's very difficult. I mean, it's hard to get a sense, and I'm not sure if anyone there knows sort of how it breaks out in terms of how many people are supportive and not supportive of the process and of the amnesty provision. But there is controversy still, and some families are unhappy. Now, it's also to say that Stephen Biko was a very well-known case. There are other either well-known cases or cases that come from more privileged families that would have, you know, reasonably expected to have their day in court. Most others, that is not a reasonable expectation. The numbers just do not allow for the vast majority of victims to have their chance to prosecute the person, even if they know the identity of the perpetrator.
There's one very well-known case that's proceeding on two tracks at the same time, the criminal justice system and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I'm thinking of Dirk Coetzee. Tell us who he is and about these two parallel tracks.
Sure. In brief, Dirk Coetzee was for many years a killer and a murderer for the state of South Africa. He killed many people. In 1989, he left the country for complicated reasons, in part for his own interests. He left the country and turned over his information to the ANC. In the last few years, he's come back and has always, since 1989, actually, at that time, some of the stories came out publicly, what he was saying, and he has since never denied what it is that he's done. He's sorry for it. He, as he said to me when I interviewed him in South Africa, you know, he said, "You carry these corpses around with you for the rest of your life." I mean, you can feel his sense of agony. But he did do a lot of quite horrible things. One of the stories that he tells is sitting around a campfire, not exactly a campfire, a bonfire with a number of his security force colleagues, with several ANC dissidents that they'd picked up, roasting on the fire. I mean, literally. And Derek Coetzee and his colleagues sat and had a barbecue and drank beer while these people were roasting over the fire. I mean, quite gruesome stories. Now, he has applied for amnesty for many of the acts that he has publicly admitted to many times. In the meantime, he was also indicted by one of the attorneys general in South Africa. That case has gone forward. He has been convicted as of a few weeks ago. And he now stands convicted while his amnesty application is still pending. This case, I think, shows how complicated the relationship is between the Truth Commission happening on one side, which is not a court body. It's not, it doesn't represent the courts, and it's an independent government commission, versus the trials that are going forward in a way that they should. Now, what's complicated is that when he was indicted, he tried to stop the trial before or until his own amnesty application could be considered. That did not happen. His trial went forward nonetheless, and his amnesty application will be considered relatively shortly. People presume that he would probably get amnesty because people pretty much know what he's done. They were political acts. He was working for the state, etc.
So he won't serve a sentence until the amnesty is decided on. If he gets amnesty, he won't serve any sentence. If he doesn't get amnesty, he will be sentenced.
Exactly.
Have most people been apologizing when they confess to the Truth Commission? An apology isn't essential to getting amnesty, just confession.
That's right. Some people have, and some people haven't. And it's disconcerting, actually, I think, not only for a neutral observer, but also certainly to the families, to see a perpetrator confess to the very much the details of what they did and not to apologize or not even to look as if they feel sorry for what they did, remorse. That's not required. You can't require remorse, really. If you did, of course, it, you know, when to judge whether it's really real. But it's difficult. It's difficult to watch people, in some cases, tell full and quite horrific stories about what they did without a sense of compassion for the victims.
You've studied similar truth commissions in other countries, and I'm wondering how some of those countries have used the information that's emerged from the truth commissions.
The ideal scenario is that the commission is not only a process, but of course also a product, and a product in the form of a report that is put to use. Most truth commissions end with at least one good solid chapter of recommendations for the state, reforms that should be implemented, judicial reforms, political reforms in the police force, mechanisms to prevent these kinds of abuses from taking place in the future. Now, there is a mixed record in the 20 or so cases of previous truth commissions around the world as to how far these recommendations that are left behind have been implemented. But the commission, even leaving that aside, the commission's report has in many cases provided a written record of the country's history that otherwise doesn't exist and can very quickly be either erased or manipulated for purposes of the political leaders. If you look at a place like Argentina or El Salvador or even Uganda or Sri Lanka, which is now finishing up its Truth Commission this month, the reports serve to officially acknowledge what it was that this state has been responsible for and unsilences that part of the past that previously has never been easily talked about publicly. In other words, for victims, especially if you look at countries such as often in Latin America, the practice that has been common is the disappearance of persons. They are taken away, never seen again. And if this is under a military regime, for example, it is common that talking about such events is impossible. I mean, if you talk about what's happened, you yourself are put at risk. By having the state print a report that says 9,000 people were disappeared in Argentina, there are 20,000 documented victims of either killing or torture in El Salvador, etc., that can change the dynamic of people being able to speak about their own past and about their own families' experiences.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Priscilla Hayner is writing a book about truth commissions around the world. She's a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute at the New School for Social Research in New York.